Welcome to the CityDAO podcast. I'm your host, Eric Gilbert Williams. CityDAO is exploring decentralized asset ownership on chain, starting with a simple piece of land purchased in Wyoming during 2021. Each parcel of land becomes an NFT that can be owned collectively by the DAO or by individuals, just like you and me. CityDAO is a DAO. In other words, it's a decentralized autonomous organization, meaning that land governance, treasury, and other things, including this show you're listening to right now, are all managed by the community. Check out the FAQ at citydao.io to learn more, or check out the CityDAO Discord channel to get all the latest updates. Now let's get started with the show. Here on the CityDAO podcast, we try to stay on top of fresh and trending subjects. Some of you may have heard the news that the Republic of the Marshall Islands has just moved to legalize and recognize DAOs in the country. Now, although the country's entire population is quite small, less than 100,000 people, it's smaller than Iceland, and it's located way, way out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, this is the first time that an entire country as a whole has embraced the legalization and recognition of rights as a DAO. In some ways, we can compare the symbolic significance of this to Wyoming as a state when they legalized and recognized DAOs in their Bill 38 last year, and also when the country of El Salvador legalized Bitcoin as an official currency tender alongside the US dollar. This stuff, all of it, every single bit of this goes down in history forever. There's only one first, and this is a first for a country. Now, DAOs are growing increasingly in popularity everywhere, yet there remains an incredible amount of uncertainty, confusion. I know that in the CityDAO talks and community chat, we go through this all the time. We don't know the answers to a lot of things. And when we don't know the answers, but we're making decisions, that creates a certain amount of uncertainty, and that uncertainty breeds fear. Fear about regulation, about reporting requirements, about what's actually going to happen versus what we actually did. And how does this all work? If you read Bill 38 in Wyoming, it's very clear that DAOs are recognized as legal entities, but it's not clear at all how to do it, what to do, what not to do, how to do the not what to do. There's no information whatsoever and no guidelines. So this creates a bit of uncertainty, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, I get the pleasure today to talk with Adam Miller, the co-founder of MyDAO. MyDAO, found at mydao.org, helps DAOs incorporate in the Marshall Islands. So we're going to talk a little bit about securities, about compliance items like KYC, AML, anti-money laundering, financial reporting, and much, much more. This is obviously, as a general disclaimer, there is absolutely zero financial advice at all on anything that we're about to say. And there's absolutely no legal advice at all about what we're going to say. We're not lawyers. We're just explorers. We're experimenters. We're scientists. We're curious. We're crypto enthusiasts. We're people trying to figure out the answers. And we're having a discussion now, a thought-provoking discussion, that hopefully triggers something in your mind and helps you have your own conversations with people. And maybe collectively together with some time, maybe we will find the answers eventually. So Adam, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking the time out of your busy day to chat. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Thanks, Eric. It's good to see you. It's a pleasure to be here. So I really appreciate the invite.
Right on. And where are you located right now?
I'm located in Newport Beach, which is in Orange County, California, where it is almost always sunny. And so it's another beautiful day, blue skies. And in between recording podcasts and working on DAOs, I'll be spending some time at the beach.
Dude, I'm super jealous. You know, I'm in Canada. I love Canada. Actually, it's really tempting for me to bring up some Trudeau stuff and cryptocurrency laws right now. And I really have to bite my tongue because that's not the focus of this show. Generally speaking, I do love Canada, though, with some little caveat exceptions here. But man, it's snowing. We're snowing crazy all night. You can hear the shoveling crew come through with their machinery. And looking out my window, it's definitely a snowy day. So I'm jealous of your sunny days living on the beach. What have you been doing for the past 5 years? What's your really subject focus?
Yeah, sure. So after being an entrepreneur for the first part of my career, and while I was following everything happening in crypto since I bought my first Bitcoins in 2012, I took a job at a large financial services institution, which I think isn't uncommon for people in crypto today. So I spent almost 6 years working at Capital Group, which is a large global investment management firm doing emerging technology research. And so that research included blockchain, crypto, Bitcoin, et cetera, but also extended it to cybersecurity, AIML, data science, and things like that. So it was just the last several months that I decided to devote my life to crypto after simply having it as a side obsession and a hobby for many years. So when I really saw the crypto light and I decided to go full crypto was also around the time I started getting really excited about DAOs. And so several months ago, I started first joining DAOs and learning about DAOs and eventually started a DAO consulting firm called DAOplatform.io. So I've been doing DAO consulting for the last several months. And then it was when an old friend of mine named Mark Lurie called me up for some DAO consulting help. So he told me about this opportunity, MyDAO, and what was going on in the Marshall Islands. And that's how I got connected with my DAO. And as soon as I heard about the opportunity that we had with the Marshall Islands, I realized that that's where I had to devote my life. So there's been a number of shifts and evolutions. But yeah, the last 5 years was Capital Group and then finally going full crypto.
And tell me about MyDAO. Like, who? So you're a co-founder there. There's someone else. Is it a DAO in and of itself, or is it a company helping DAOs? Like, what's the structure?
So we're a company helping DAOs. We're not a DAO. We are an LLC based out of the Marshall Islands. And yeah, so my co-founder, a guy named Mark Lurie, is actually the CEO of Shipyard Software. Shipyard Software created Clipper, which is the first DEX that's focused on retail customers making trades under $10,000. So they actually have the best deals on swaps for any trade under $10,000 almost all the time. And as many DEXs, Clipper and the folks at Shipyard, they wanted to give the DEX over to the community so that it would be managed by the community through a DAO. And Shipyard will continue doing software development on it. But that way, the community really controls the product. That's what got Shipyard interested in, okay, well, if we're going to turn over our DEX to a DAO, what type of legal entity are we going to need? What approach do we need to take in terms of corporate formation? And so that's where my conversations with Mark started, was both of us realizing there's a huge problem to solve here. And Mark has relationships in the Marshall Islands. So one of our other co-founders named Bobby Muller, who is the head of our Marshall Islands operations, he is very close to folks in the government. And Mark and he had both worked with the government previously on other crypto-related legislation. And the Marshall Islands has very forward-thinking, innovative people in their government. It's actually a very effective democracy. They're always happy to adapt to the times. And when Mark and Bobby brought this conversation to the government of the Marshall Islands, it quickly turned into a very exciting conversation about creating this new type of legal entity for DAOs. And so the last several months has been us collaborating with the government and working through passing this new legislation that we just announced less than 7 days ago at ETH Denver at an event called DAO Denver. We finally announced Marshall Islands has this new legislation. It's the first LLC. It's really the first corporate entity of any kind in the world that's truly focused on DAOs. So that's what we've been doing. So the last week has been crazy, constantly on the phone with people interested in learning more about our DAO LLC. And also excited to tell you more about it as well.
How was the event?
Oh, the event was awesome. I only regret that I left early to get back to my puppy here at home, my Maltipoo, Goldie, who you met earlier.
Your podcast assistant.
Exactly, my podcast assistant. So, but DAO Denver was amazing. ETH Denver was amazing. The energy is just incredible. And I won't be the first person to say this in the media. It felt like everyone at ETH Denver was either starting a DAO or offering tools for DAOs. DAOs are hot right now. And I think things really shifted in December. And I don't know exactly what it was about December, but at the beginning of December, I felt like DAOs were still just one of these topics that people in crypto have always been interested in, and maybe one day it'll happen. And by the end of December, everyone was talking about DAOs, and all kinds of DAO platforms started getting released. Tooling for DAOs and for DAO contributors started getting released. A lot of capital started flowing into this space. And so 2022, you've also probably heard people say in the media, but 2022 is going to be the year of the DAO, and it may be a good year for other things like DeFi and NFTs as well. But this is going to be the year that DAOs really take off. The tooling is advancing at an incredible clip. These legal entities like the Marshall Islands DAO are finally ready, finally available, so that DAOs can have limited liability and corporate personhood just like any other organization. ETH Denver was awesome. And what it taught me was this is going to be the year of the DAO.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I remember when DAOs were legalized in Wyoming, and then I can't remember when I checked it. It was probably a couple months later. I went to look at a corporate registry name search inside Wyoming and searched for the name DAO just to see how many corporations registered with DAO in their name. And there was hundreds. It was a really fast turnaround. These were like brand new companies just popping up all over the place. Some were on religion, some were nonprofit charities. Some of them were clearly for profit and covering all types of different subjects. So it was just this mad rush towards DAO registrations. And I don't know, and I think you're totally right. You know, there was this weird vibe. There was a really big push, and it's just growing still more and more. I do wonder how much of that may have been triggered accidentally or by default of Wyoming coming out and doing what they did. Maybe it wasn't about Wyoming, but maybe there was several DAOs, CityDAO as an example, that popped up because of the Wyoming legislation. And that created a bunch of media and buzz, and that created a bunch of interest, which I don't really know exactly what it is that triggered this sort of avalanche, you could say. I mean, DAOs, the concept has been around for a long time. And now moving forward, though, how do we manage a DAO? How do we structure a DAO. The City DAO, we're spending money on lawyers to try and figure out even what questions to ask. Never mind, you know, figure out what answers to seek, right? We don't even know what the right questions are yet in some cases. And you know, some things are clear and some are not. And then you talk to one group of lawyers and they say the answer is crystal clear. And then the other group of lawyers says it's definitely not. So there's a lot of challenges there. Now, before we go into some of those micro, what are you finding in the Marshall Islands right now? I mean, how many DAOs are being registered? There's a good, interesting question. Or how many inquiries are you getting?
Sure. So since launching 5 days ago, we have about 50 inquiries. We've signed up 2 customers and launched 1 DAO so far. So we're very early. We're offering some incentives to our early customers.
Grassroots, baby.
Yeah, exactly. So it's the beginning. Absolutely the beginning. And I think a lot of the folks that are reaching out, they actually did look at the Wyoming LLC as an option. Some of them may have looked at the Colorado cooperative law or even the possibility of using other corporate wrappers like from Switzerland or Panama. But I think most folks have found that there are meaningful limitations with all these other laws so far. So for example, the Wyoming LLC law, there's a couple things that really are not very aligned with the values of DAOs. One of those things is the requirement of having humans representing the organization, just the way any company has to. You know, it's almost like board members or officers, where a small group of people has a special power within the Wyoming LLC, and they could potentially split off from the will of the community. Just like if they were Gnosis safe holders and they wanted to split off from the will of your, let's say, your token holders who are doing their governance elsewhere. Similarly, there's a requirement for a quorum of at least 51% on votes related to the organization. No DAO gets 51%, and you don't need it. The fact is that most votes affect either a small number of people, or a small number of people are experts and knowledgeable, or a small number of people care. So some of the most effective DAOs out there, like DXDAO is a great example. It's an early DAO, very successful, has some great DeFi products. You get about 5 or 10% of people voting most of the time. A lot of the folks we're hearing from, they've already been thinking about this issue. Some of them even told me they went to DAO Denver at ETH Denver to try to answer this question. And you know, similarly, most of the lawyers I've talked to in this space, they don't know the answer yet either. And I think if any lawyer says they do, I'd be a little bit suspicious, because the best lawyers, like take David Kerr, who co-wrote the Andreessen Horowitz tome on legal entities for DAOs. I think he would agree that he doesn't have the answers yet, right? We're all trying to figure this out together. But yeah, so it's been a lot of interest, and now just trying to figure out the details of each case, whether it really is a perfect fit for our LLC, and then how to move forward.
So about what you said a second ago, to my understanding, when I read the Bill 38 about DAOs in Wyoming, to my understanding, there was a option, like a checkbox option, pick one or pick two. And one option was, is the DAO fully autonomous and run completely through, let's say, smart contracts? Or does it have human representation over certain actions? And what you described sounded like the latter as an option that could be selected. And that's absolutely, you know, valid and true. And I'm wondering about the other side, where the autonomous option is on the table. For example, CityDAO chose the autonomous one. Now, of course, it's not operating fully autonomously right now, but that's just the nature of also being very, very new. We just elected in a council that takes essentially the voting powers away, you could say, from the core team of, let's say, 5. And now it's in a group of I think there's still 5 core team members, but now there's 16 community elected council members that are now on. So there's 21 people on that core team. So that's a step towards the decentralization. And the intention, of course, is to eventually get fully autonomous at some point. I'm wondering about your comments on that front. Is that how you understood the law as well? Or maybe I've misread it a little bit, or did you want to expand on that a little bit?
So that's a good question. You know, I'm going to have to look into that a little bit further. That's what I've been hearing people tell me, or those were two of the key limitations. But having just started this last week, honestly, I got to look into that further. It's a good question.
Yeah. And you know, you're going to know so many things that I and we don't. You know, that's the whole purpose of having these conversations. A lot of people don't know the right answers, or know the full details, or know the full scope. We're kind of just going off of what we've heard and what we've learned so far. And the whole concept of a DAO is to work collaboratively. So yeah, we definitely want to keep talks open with you and move forward. And you know, on the flip side, man, going fully autonomous has its risks when it's so early like this. And I don't know if you saw the Build Finance, I think DAO, I forget the name of it right now. And they just had a sort of a takeover where one of the community members, and it was a fully autonomous, right? Well, to a much more autonomous than normal, you could say. And that community member ended up finding a loophole, taking over voting control of the entire DAO and liquidating all of its assets. I don't know. Did you follow that one or see that?
Yeah.
Like, how do we deal with like people that criticize DAOs that aren't fully autonomous right now, in my opinion, need to chill out because we don't have this fully set up yet. You know, we could look backwards at 2016 at the DAO hack, and anyone that wants to disregard that as old news just needs to look at what happened right now with Build Finance. Like, we're not really ready for a fully autonomous DAO yet. We're close, and these experiments get us closer and closer. Do you have any comments on that subject?
Yeah, I think there's I think it's a great point. And I think there's two things I would think about. One is that you have to have a liquid token for this risk to be on the table, right? The risk assumes that someone could come in, buy 51% of the tokens basically, or buy less and, you know, hope some people won't vote against you. But basically it's a 51% attack, right? You buy half the tokens, vote to send all the money, you know, in the treasury to you. To yourself, and now you've, you know, walked away with the treasury of the DAO. A lot of DAOs don't have liquid governance tokens, so either they can only be assigned from the treasury to members, or from members back to the treasury, or perhaps with the approval of the DAO. And so in that case, no one can come in and buy 51%. In the case that the DAO is liquid, I think it becomes more of a financial incentive question, just like most of the blockchain platforms that we know and love. Which is to say, if the governance token is trading well below treasury, then you probably do have a risk, because that means someone can easily come in, buy half the tokens for well under the value in the treasury, and then take the money out of the treasury. If at least your treasury is trading at a price that's, your governance token is trading at a price that's similar to the treasury value, then, you know, presumably for someone to buy half of those tokens, it's going to cost them not even just half, because the price will go up over time, it may cost them just as much money as they're getting. And so there's less incentive to do it. But I still do think that it's a meaningful risk that people do need to think about.
And I think that this ties so closely into the concept of regulation and rules around a DAO from the perspective of why could or should any individual person have 51% of a vote in a DAO? That's not decentralized, right? At all. There's no concept of decentralization present when one person has 51% of a vote. It's a centralized entity at that point, which is an undermining of the concept of what a DAO is and the concept of decentralization and the concept of what we're trying to build towards. But without any sort of rule or practical measure to enforce that, then there's no real recourse. Now, for example, if there was a rule or regulation around that a DAO must be a DAO, in other words, a DAO must be decentralized, that no individual or entity is able to have direct or indirect control over an amount of the voting in excess of just them as an individual, then this person who did this liquidation would be violating law. And they'd have the hammer down of any law enforcement agency that they happen to violate coming down on their head, and justice would be served. But those laws don't exist yet. Do you have any thoughts around that subject?
You know, that's a great point. The one thing I do want to comment on is there's a lot of ambiguity in the term decentralized autonomous organization. And it comes from two different places, I think. One is, what exactly does decentralized refer to and autonomous refer to? Because each of them could talk about, so like the last word in DAO is organization, right? And so is decentralized mean that the organization is decentralized in terms of there not being any central power? Or does it mean that the organization is built on decentralized technology, on, you know, distributed ledger technology, on blockchain? And so now you could say, well, it's okay to have an organization with centralized power. As long as it's running on decentralized technology, we could say that's still a DAO. It's just a different type of DAO. Same thing with autonomous. Does autonomous mean that the day-to-day actions and activities of the organization are automated? Or does autonomous also mean that the smart contract is taking action without the humans being involved? So less of even a human organization and more of a smart contract or a piece of software that's taking its own actions. And so each of those two terms can mean two different things. So that gives us four dimensions of qualities that we might be talking about when we talk about a DAO. And for each of those four dimensions, there's a spectrum, right? From not very decentralized in this regard to very decentralized in this regard. And so across each of those four dimensions, you have the spectrum of not at all to very much. And so now you have this like enormously broad set of possibilities for what a DAO can be that all probably fits within the term decentralized autonomous organization. So I think a lot of what you said applies to some of those types of, you know, situations for what a DAO actually looks like, and maybe less to others.
Absolutely. You're totally right. And this is that subject of what are the rules and how do we define them and what standards of measure and value do we use to define them? And now I'm curious to know, which is really more the subject here, what is the Marshall Islands doing? And when I criticize Wyoming's Bill 38, it's with love because I love what they did. It's fantastic. Someone's got to do it. Move forward. I'm very grateful for what they've done. Yet there's a lot of lack of clarity. And that's my constructive criticism, is that they didn't provide any guidance at all to do any of this. So where's the Marshall Islands in all these conversations? Is it similar status of uncertainty? Have they made maybe some cool progress on some fronts at least? Or you know, maybe you could describe the state out there.
Sure. So the new law in the Marshall Islands, there's really a couple of things that are really meaningful about it that are unique in terms of the legal entities that are available to DAOs today. So one of those things is, and you mentioned Wyoming may have some of this as well. One of those things is explicitly recognizing the fact that the operating agreement and basically the bylaws equivalent, the governance of the organization can actually be stored on chain. You don't need an English language version of, you know, describing who are the members, describing how are decisions made. You can say like that information resides in this smart contract at this address on the blockchain. And one thing I know Wyoming does make you do is whenever you change this operating agreement, which I think has to be written in English as well, you have to update it. You have to send it back to the state. Say, okay, here's the new version of our operating agreement. In the Marshall Islands, you don't have to do that. So it's enough to say the governance rules of this organization are defined, you know, in the smart contract, and that's good enough. The second thing is the acknowledgement that membership can be represented by either token holders or by blockchain addresses that are stored by that smart contract. And so you don't need to send a list of members to the Marshall Islands. You don't even need to maintain a list of members on a piece of paper written in English. All that information can be stored on the blockchain in your smart contracts, and it's recognized by the statute so that all of the people involved with those tokens or those addresses receive the limited liability of the LLC. Now, our LLC, for now at least, is a nonprofit LLC. So now this whole question of what exactly is a for-profit versus a nonprofit gets kind of complicated with DAOs and other token projects, because, you know, we're generally not talking about equity in the first place. We're talking about governance tokens or some kind of utility tokens. But if you're going to return profit, like effectively what is profit, to those token holders, you're probably talking about a for-profit entity, right? Or if the whole purpose of the organization is to make money for the token holders, then you're probably talking about a for-profit organization. But most DAOs actually don't fit into that for-profit definition. Most DAOs actually fit into nonprofit because they're not returning profit back to token holders, or their purpose is much greater than simply making money for the shareholders. Usually it can be some societal purpose, some other public good, education. It can be even just for the benefit of its members. And that benefit goes broader than just simply handing them, you know, money for their tokens. And people can still make money because the governance tokens can still rise in value. It's just that it's not by virtue of being a for-profit entity. So that's what this new law does, is it allows for a DAO to truly be a DAO. One person has to do KYC one time. So there is still a requirement, and that's because there's a foreign investment business license, a FIBL, that's required once you set up your DAO to remain legal. One person has to go through a process to get that license on behalf of the DAO, but that person does not remain in any special position of power or responsibility or anything like that in terms of the DAO. That person simply receives the DAO and receives the license and then updates the operating agreement with our help so that it reflects the nature of the members being, for example, stored in the smart contract or based on token holders or something like that.
So the Marshall Islands essentially has taken some very clear steps to help keep anonymity present. Before I go into my next question, is that seems to be how I understand it. Is that correct?
Yes. Now, keep in mind, the purpose of the LLC is to protect the humans involved in the project from liability. And so at some point, you know, the DAO may want to release, like if people are getting sued by the DAO and those people want protection, they actually are going to want people to know that they're involved in this DAO that has the LLC from the Marshall Islands. But yeah, there's no responsibility of revealing that information ahead of time to the government, to us in any way. So yes, it can basically, your identity can be your blockchain wallet that you're using to interact with the DAO, or the fact that, you know, your address is listed as a token holder in an ERC-20 contract or anything like that. Yes.
How does the Marshall Islands feel about the prospect of, let's say, individuals residing in a communist regime having governance rights over entities of any part in the Marshall Islands? And maybe that's more of a political question that I should ask them. But, you know, when we're looking at CityDAO, for example, we own physical land in Wyoming, and we have members that come from China. And how comfortable would the government of the United States be, and how warm would they be towards DAOs and anonymity towards DAOs, knowing that people who reside in communist regimes may have and do have governance rights over entities in the United States? This is, on one side, I think this is absolutely fantastic. This is a step towards uniting humanity on the globe as one species. But I bet you that there's some people in power who would not feel that way. And I'm wondering, is this a subject that's come up in your conversations with, let's say, the Marshall Islands leadership, or is this not really been talked about yet? I'm just curious.
So it's a great question. And of course, I cannot speak on behalf of the Marshall Islands government or the country, but I will say this. Having an LLC does not give you permission to break the law. Any group of people running any company could go out and accept investment or provide services to someone in Iran in a way that breaks, you know, US sanctions rules, but that doesn't make it legal, and they might get in trouble for doing it. So having this LLC, again, doesn't give you permission to break the rules. And if you break the rules, you know, you or the company can still get in trouble, right? So this LLC, let's say you're a member in an LLC that's a DAO that you really care about, and one of the members or the DAO breaks the rules, well, your DAO can still be sued. In fact, that's part of the beauty of this, is that your DAO will be sued instead of you getting sued personally. But breaking the rules can still get you in a lot of trouble, can still get you sued. And there's also some rules that go beyond the corporate veil, right? So, you know, people probably heard about the concept of piercing the corporate veil. So just like any other corporation or LLC in the world, there's certain behaviors, and this is not something I have a lot of detail about, but there's certain behaviors that individuals can still be held accountable for. That's why sometimes you have CEOs or CFOs that go to jail, right? Even though they were doing something, you know, that's part of the business of a company. And so that's, I think, the important thing that I would keep in mind, is that, you know, the members of the DAO are still expected to follow the rules and to, I think, act in good faith that they're doing things that are above board.
Yeah, very good point. So essentially, if I were in political power of whatever, I could look at this as there's no real threat to my governance of my geographical area at all. There's just it would be discriminatory at that point to not want someone from a communist regime to have some sort of governance rights here, because obviously entities cross border all over the place partially own companies inside of each other's places. So there's really no difference per se from that respect, other than, you know, maybe wanting to breach the anonymity and have, you know, physical proof of who these people are. But that's just more of a control item, which is a little bit of a separate subject than, you know, having them there in the first place. So that's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing too is that, you know, this LLC law is not new. We amended the existing LLC law so that it would recognize nonprofit DAOs, and the nature of nonprofit DAOs as being valid for the purpose of forming an LLC, right? And receiving this protection. Anything you can do with a DAO LLC based out of the Marshall Islands, you could have done 10 years ago with an LLC based out of the Marshall Islands. The same rules and regulations would have applied. And so I don't want to make it sound like our law has made it any easier for people to do anything that's untoward. It's the same expectations and rules apply as before, except that indeed, you know, because the law as it existed already does not require you to send your, you know, updated membership agreement to the country, there's no enforcement of any kind of rules about where those people, you know, may be from.
So we've talked a lot about anonymity. How about securities? Let's say a DAO registers in the Marshall Islands, and let's say they do some sort of a raise in some capacity, and let's just throw a number out there, and the DAO owns, you know, $10 million of assets, whether that be in crypto or a fiat or an asset of some sort. Do the DAO holders own those assets? And what are the implications of that from the Marshall Islands registration and regulation and reporting perspective?
So, you know, I like to talk about the legal related issues of DAOs, as I tend to hear about them as falling into one of three categories. One is legal entity, two is taxation, three is securities laws. And we're really, at MyDAO, we're really only focused on one of those things, which is legal entity. Just like having the legal entity doesn't mean the entity or its people are allowed to break other laws, having this legal entity doesn't have any impact, positive, negative, or sideways, on the fact that you must follow securities laws. And securities laws, you know, let's take the United States, for example. It doesn't matter where your company is registered. If you have, I think, investors out of the U.S., you have to follow U.S. securities laws. There may even be other situations where you have to follow them as well. And so those laws will apply the same to our LLCs as they would apply in the Marshall Islands, as they would apply to any other organization. That doesn't mean I can't pontificate on how people are approaching these issues, you know, as an individual myself. I think what DAOs are doing today, there's risk involved because we're operating in a gray area in a lot of cases. A lot of DAOs are selling or giving away tokens, governance tokens / utility tokens, and not calling them securities because the judgment that all of us in the DAO world are making is that these are not securities. And then these tokens are rising in value and people are selling them and making money. So at some point, you know, the SEC or other regulators are going to want to evaluate this in more detail and say, do we believe these are securities or not? And what are the exact configuration options or characteristics that would make a token in a DAO in these respects a security or not a security? I do think in 2022, we'll probably see the SEC or some governments, regulators step in for the first time and acknowledge the existence of DAOs, acknowledge that they see what's happening and maybe do some research on it. And then perhaps, you know, lay down a ruling or a law or sue someone in the case where they feel people are crossing a line. I don't think any of us can possibly know exactly how all of that will turn out. My hope is that regulators will at least acknowledge the gray area that people are operating in and not just try to fit everyone into, you know, an old model or just blanket say all of these are securities, you know, but rather try to acknowledge that there's something really innovative happening here and try not to stop that innovation from happening. And I'll give you one example of what I think is very innovative is that in some ways, a lot of DAOs today look like, I'm not saying they are, but they look like nonprofits with equity value. Now, in the traditional corporate world, at least in the United States, if you have a nonprofit organization, if you said, I'm going to sell you 5% of governance rights in my nonprofit for X dollars, people would laugh you out of the room. They say, what are you talking about? You can't sell part of your nonprofit. That's not how it works. Nonprofit is an entity with no owners. It has a board of directors. It has responsibilities to the community and to social good. With DAOs, you have organizations that are nonprofits, or at least they are operating as nonprofits, and they are still able to sell tokens that represent governance interests in their organization. And as a result, they get a market cap, basically, right? There's wealth, there's capital that's generated through the process of building a very compelling nonprofit. And that market cap can exceed $1 billion, right, in some cases. And in a lot of cases, tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. And so there's something very beautiful about that, because now a nonprofit organization, an organization that's trying to make the world a better place, whether it's planting trees, saving people, or inuring some benefits to its members for whatever purpose, can actually create capital and then sell some of that capital to fund future operations and grow faster in a way that traditionally only for-profit companies could. And so if we can get all of society to shift to a model where we all start believing that nonprofits actually are worth something, right, in terms of real financial value, and that therefore, if they want to, they can sell part of themselves or their governance rights or some kind of utility, right, for part of that total market cap, use that money to have more social good impact. I mean, that's amazing. And so I do think we need to, and I would urge regulators to try to look at how much good can come from this conceptual shift in thinking and just not stamp all of it out, you know, either by accident or intentionally, but rather look for ways to acknowledge the gray area and protect investors, protect the economy without harming this like social innovation.
Yeah, I agree with so much of that. You're clearly much more experienced and deeper into that world than I am. I'm just a person that jumps in and am curious. You know, let's do this. Let's try that. And I'm wondering, from the Marshall Islands perspective, is government there kind of waiting for regulators and SEC to bring forth some rulings or some guidance? Or is there a bit of an initiative they might be pushing towards, or some sort of suggestions that they're putting on the table? Or is it more hands-off? I'm curious about that.
There's nothing that I'm aware of that the government is looking to get involved in with respect to securities laws. Yeah, no, I'm not aware of that being on the table. Like, this is really, again, this is really just looking at the legal entity issue and solving for that. And then, you know, I think what I want to do is acknowledge that these securities issues and tax related issues, it's like deciding, are you a nonprofit or not? I can tell you what the law says makes you a nonprofit, but you're the business person. Like, you have to decide whether you're going to sign a piece of paper or your DAO is going to agree to something that says that, you know, you're a nonprofit entity, and whether the tax authorities in the Marshall Islands are going to come after you later because they think that you lied. That's on you, or at least it's on the organization to make those certifications. And I do think that goes outside the scope of what my DAO is trying to advise people on.
Yeah. And anyone listening to this right now, as I said at the beginning of this episode, nothing I say, nothing Adam says should be information that you make decisions on. Just don't do it, right? You have to do your own research. You have to make your own decisions. There's no one that's going to be responsible for your decisions other than yourself. And part of this requires diligence. It requires research, digging, more research on top of the research. And, you know, one of the things on that subject that comes to my mind is when I was looking for, well, when I heard about Wyoming legalizing DAOs, I did some digging and found that it was Bill 38. And then there was articles about Bill 38, but not Bill 38 itself. A little more digging finally revealed what bill, like where the official state published Bill 38, found that, read it. Through reading that, I received a ton of clarity, which was really helpful. And I tried to find that for the Marshall Islands. I tried to find where the official rules are posted. And I couldn't find it. And I would love to include that in the show notes to this episode, in addition to me reading it myself, for my own diligence purposes, just like anyone listening here should read that for their own diligence purposes. Adam, do you know where I can find that?
I have a copy of the amendment that's signed by the necessary government officials. Someone else just told me the other day that they couldn't find it in whatever database they were looking at as well. So that's something we're also going to look into, is whether there is some kind of government database that we can make sure this gets updated into. So that's a great question. And I'll definitely give you a copy and a link to the actual amendment that was signed into law.
Are you going to put it on your website? That might be a great spot for it.
It's a good idea. Yes. So some of the things we're working on right now is some marketing materials, a new website, you know, like even just like a FAQ, right, of frequently asked questions that I'm getting. So as soon as we can, we're going to be getting that out there. It's just a matter of, you know, launching less than a week ago and just having, to be honest, I'm prioritizing the calls with potential customers right now, because there's so many people that want to talk. But I agree with you. Those are important things I should also get to as soon as I can. And if anyone's looking for a job, you know, we're going to be hiring before too long as well. And maybe you can help us, you know, solve some of these things as well.
Startup life, man. This is entrepreneur lifestyle in a nutshell. You know, I've been, you know, an entrepreneur my whole life. I dropped out of school to get into my first businesses and never looked back ever since. And the list of things that need to get done is a list that is perpetual and never ending. And it's difficult sometimes to get the flack from people that don't understand. And they're like, oh, you should have done this and you should have done that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I should have. Right.
Yeah, but right.
what do you want from me? I'm working 80 hours a week. You know, I'm one person, even with a team, you know, they're stretched thin. Like, we're doing the best we can. So anyways, yeah, I think everyone needs to, and actually, no, this is a good point. You know, people that are joining DAOs, really think about what I just said, right? People that are running DAOs, a lot of times they're not getting paid. They're volunteer based, or if they are getting paid, it's nothing compared to what they would normally getting paid in anything else. So anyone that's just joining a DAO for the first time and has some sort of expectation that they're joining Microsoft that has everything figured out, you know, or joining Google or joining Apple with, you know, everything figured out, you know, that's not the case. We are people, we're equal people all trying to figure this out. And some people like Adam happen to take on more responsibility on their shoulders than maybe other people do. So yeah, we're trying to figure this stuff out. And yeah, if you could share with me that link on the show notes to this episode, we're going to put on a quick reference click URL to Adam's Twitter and also to mydao.org. And we'll also put a link to the laws around what a DAO is and how that works in the Marshall Islands. Those are all important resources. And I really suggest that more people do more and more research and have discussions with more politicians in their area. And the more conversations we can have we're going to start finding more of these answers. I'm wondering, have you, on the subject of finding answers, do you have any sort of tidbits or little nuggets of, I don't want to say answers because that puts liability, but things for people to think about that maybe you've discovered that would be helpful, you know, when people are registering a DAO?
You know, there are some great resources out there. One really good place to look is if you search for the A16Z DAO canon. Andreessen Horowitz, A16Z, has this great webpage that lists all kinds of awesome articles and papers and other information related to DAOs. There's probably 100 links on that page. So that is a really good place to start if you're looking to learn more. And then the other answer is just that I think it's a good idea. There should be better written, you know, documentation and resources. You know, but honestly, right now, I was just talking to someone else this morning who asked, like, what's the best way to learn about this stuff? Reach out to existing DAOs, right? DAOs that are already established. Say, hey, you're looking for help. You're looking for advice. You can join a DAO Planet. DAOPlanet.org is a DAO for people that are passionate about DAOs. And so that's a place where you can go and find lots of people that are really into DAOs. Those are the folks who hosted DAO Denver last week at ETH Denver. Those would be my recommendations.
Now, are you allowed to disclose what DAO just registered in the Marshall Islands? Is that confidential?
No, I can. So the DAO that successfully registered in the Marshall Islands is Shipyard Software. So they're the ones who had this idea for proposed the law and also helping pass the law. So just last week, I think Wednesday, Admiralty LLC is the name of the first DAO LLC based out of the Marshall Islands. And so it was officially created and launched.
Sweet.
Yes. Yep.
Are there specific, let's say from a government perspective, a reporting or financial or tax implications at the moment that you know about inside LLCs, the DAO LLCs in Marshall Islands?
So because it's a nonprofit LLC, you don't get taxed on, there's nothing to tax as far as the organization is concerned. Now, again, kind of like I said about securities laws, if you're going to hire people somewhere like in the United States, you're going to have to pay employment related taxes and follow other regulations. And actually, that's the beauty of having an LLC is that you can hire people, you can sign contracts, you can do other complicated things with respect to the law and property. But because it's a nonprofit, there's no taxes from the Marshall Islands and no financial reporting requirements.
Okay, gotcha. Is there a reason, I guess you kind of answered that. I was going to say, why should someone choose the Marshall Islands versus Switzerland or you know, other areas or Wyoming? There's a bunch that we could list off. Is there, if you had to put maybe one or two items at the top of forefront for consideration, is there some reasons why someone should consider Marshall Islands versus other regions?
Yeah, so I think, you know, in terms of Wyoming, one of the reasons I've heard, aside from these hypothetical limitations of what the law actually requires, that I'll have to do some more research into, I've heard people say that the fact that it's a state passing this law, but that the federal government could come in later and change the rules, gives you a little bit less legal clarity than the Marshall Islands, which is a sovereign nation, right, has a seat at the UN. And so there's no one who can come in and, you know, change the rules, like an alternate authority. The Marshall Islands also has a very special relationship with the United States. It's a freely associated state, which means it's an independent country, but it also gets protection from the U.S. military. It shares the Postal Service and the FAA and any number of other regulators. And so whether you're in the United States or around the world, hopefully that lends it additional credibility compared to, let's say, a Panama, which I think is on the OFAC blacklist. And so, sure, it's an option, but it may not be, you know, the best option for an organization that wants to be relatively above board. And then you might talk about Switzerland or Cayman Islands foundation-related laws, which, for one thing, they don't recognize the specific nature of a DAO. They're really wrappers that you're going to kind of fit your way around a DAO. And each of those will cost you something like $100,000 in legal fees. So these are not like the Wyoming LLC or the Marshall Islands LLC, where you can just work with a registered agent like us or in Wyoming others and pay, you know, single digit $1,000 and get something set up. It's a lot more complicated and expensive than that.
It's interesting that there's the protection, the extended umbrella extension of United States military. And I'm not an expert in that realm, but the first thing that I'm wondering about, just randomly bopping up into my head, is the location of the Marshall Islands so far into the deep Pacific. I suppose that would make it a strategic vantage point from a military perspective, both for defense, ideally, and first place is defense, but also if ever there was an offense that needed to be taken place, there's that positioning. Is that something that you know or have heard about much, or is that seems to be on the right track, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, the Marshall Islands was essential in helping the West win World War II. So I think you're right on target there. And I think that strategic importance to the United States means it's not going anywhere. You know, I'll tell you another thing related to that is that something like 20% of the world's shipping capacity is registered to the Marshall Islands through their corporate.
No kidding. Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah. And so you can imagine a reason for that is that because the Marshall Islands is protected by the U.S. military, now all of those ships are protected by the U.S. military. And so Dow LLCs aren't going to need military power to protect them. But there is a long history of people leveraging the Marshall Islands as a good place to incorporate or gain limited liability because of the favorable geopolitical nature of the country. And so there's a long history of people incorporating in the Marshall Islands. And that's another reason why it's a good place to form your Dow LLC.
Before I forget, you mentioned that you are probably going to be hiring over the next little bit. Is there a specific way that you would want someone to reach out to you if they were interested in applying?
Yeah, on mydao.org, so MIDAO.org, there's a button to just email me. I think it will email something like concierge@mydao.org and just let me know. So, and we'll set up a time to chat.
Yeah, I think there's so many people that want to get more involved like in DAOs, kind of like me, just, you know, running the show, jumping in and, hey, let's do it because I want to do something cool. I bet you that there's people listening to this that, you know, are probably going to want to inquire or they're looking at making the jump too. And kind of like you did, going full time into the space in general to some capacity.
Absolutely. And that was the cool thing about the last job I had doing DAO consulting. And now this is that literally every day I'm talking to several people who are involved in or starting DAOs. And every single one is different from the last in some way. And every single one is very interesting. And so that is probably the most rewarding, personally rewarding part of what I'm doing. I'm sure we're also helping these DAOs, but just getting to learn about everything that people are doing and build all these awesome relationships with our potential customers and customers is really cool.
One thing that I think is in common between, let's say, Wyoming and Marshall Islands, and to a certain degree, you could also include El Salvador in that context as well, is that there's a willingness from a leadership perspective to explore and embrace new technology specifically related around blockchain in its various capacities or Web3 in its various capacities. Is there a defining characteristic that you see? Like, how would you describe what it is? What is that spirit that embodies some leaders and not others that gets them, like the Marshall Islands, to embrace at a federal level the legalization of a DAO?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, I've heard you say a couple times the legalization of a DAO. And I want to just comment that I don't know if that is technically what has happened, right? I feel like that's a bigger generalization to say that we've somehow legalized a DAO. DAOs, it was always legal for people to organize themselves and to form unincorporated agreements with each other, to use blockchain smart contracts for governance. This has always been legal. And now there's a corporate entity type that you can leverage to grant corporate personhood and limited liability. So maybe I'm getting too wrapped up in the weeds, but I thought I would just clarify that.
No, that's important. And before we continue with the question, correct my wording, because I'm struggling with the wording. I kind of grasped in the air and I pulled on to legalization, not because it's the right or wrong. It just felt like the closest. Correct me. How should I and anyone else listening reference what happened in Wyoming and what happened in the Marshall Islands in regards to DAO? What happened in your own words?
DAOs and their members can now gain corporate personhood and limited liability the same as any other company can. And that's the beauty of it. Without these new laws, a DAO cannot own property. It can't own intellectual property, for example, like its name or its trademarks or the works that it creates. It can't hire people. It can pay someone crypto, but that's not legally hiring someone, right? You can't pay employment taxes or social security taxes in the United States. It can't enter into agreements with other parties. So today, if you're a DAO with $100 million in your treasury and you sign a multi-million, let's say you make a $1 million investment into a startup buying their equity, and that startup decides to just walk away with all their money and not give you anything, you have no legal recourse. You have no standing in courts of law to sue to protect your assets. So that corporate personhood is what allows a group of people as a group to actually, you know, do all of these things, hire people, sign contracts, own property. And then the limited liability, the second part, is extremely important too. That's what means that none of the individuals involved in the DAO will be held liable for the actions of the other individuals or of the DAO itself. So today, if a DAO, let's say you're part of a DAO that does run afoul of securities laws, the SEC has no one they can sue or try to put in jail other than the people involved in the DAO. And that those are the people they will go after. It's almost like as if you went on the street corner and started trying to sell securities in an illegal way, you're getting in trouble for that, right? Whereas if you work for a company, let's say you work for a 10,000 person private company, you know, up the street, and that company breaks securities rules, they're not coming after you as one of, as like the HR person or the tech person or whatever. They're coming after the company. And the worst that happens, which is still bad, is that your company gets in a lot of trouble. That's what limited liability does. And so that's what you can do with this new Marshall Islands law or the Wyoming law is make it so that none of the people contributing to the DAO or founding the DAO are going to be held liable for the actions of the organization.
So would it be fair if I said that the Marshall Islands has now recognized DAOs as corporate entities?
Yes. Yeah.
Am I still off a little bit? It seems like I'm closer.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say is off is just being a DAO doesn't make you a corporate entity. You have to file with the government and follow the law as we've amended it to receive and maintain your corporate entity. So, you know, the DAO can't, right? It can still be a non-recognized entity, but once you register it as a Marshall Islands nonprofit LLC, that's when you get recognized as a, and actually a limited liability company is different technically from a incorporated organization. So even that word corporate is actually a little bit different from an LLC. So LLC being a limited liability company is different from an incorporation. And so it's not that any DAO will be recognized as a corporate entity or an LLC, but it's that you can become one if you want to. You can receive that LLC, the benefits of the LLC law by becoming an LLC.
So the Marshall Islands has allowed DAOs to register as limited liability entities in the country.
Yes, and without compromising their true nature or their values.
Okay. And then I guess similar could be said about Wyoming and wherever else decides to do that too. This is really important because there's a lot of misinformation that floats around out there. And it's important to be precise in wording. I mean, Constitution DAO, you know, is still obviously facing some challenges on that too. You know, did people own the Constitution or not? And how is the wording done? And the defense that they had, of course, was that the wording never said ownership, even though it may have been discussed outside of that. So the wording is so specific because we're dealing with the law, right? We're dealing with you know, hundreds of years of corporate law and limited liability and nonprofit law written in stone.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
So before we wrap up here, I'm wondering if there's any hot subjects on your mind right now in, let's say, the DAO ecosystem as a whole, or maybe about CityDAO, or maybe about MyDAO or the Marshall Islands. What's a really hot subject right now that you're diving deep into?
A hot subject right now is the social aspect of running a DAO. So, or you could say the community aspect. So in my DAO consulting practice, I like to use this mental model for describing the capabilities of a DAO. They kind of fit into three categories. One is tokenization. There's almost always some element of tokens, fungible, non-fungible, whatever. Two is governance. So what's the mechanism for making decisions and enforcing or executing those decisions? Three is community or the social element of the DAO, which is, okay, now you've got a group of people, maybe five people, maybe 5 million people or somewhere in between. And these people need to be able to collaborate and work together in helping the DAO achieve its mission. And every problem that any group of people anywhere in the world has when they try to coordinate and do something together still exists for DAOs. Now, this new layer of technology on top is, and especially will, help solve these problems in a new way. But no one has achieved the level of scale of work in a DAO that people regularly achieve with companies. So, you know, think about a group of 1,000 people that wants to work together. We've figured out a really good way to do that. Put a board in charge of a CEO, in charge of the next level, in charge of the next level, in charge of the next level. And then you make rules. And if people break the rules, they got to go, right? And when people are really good at following the rules, they get paid more. And it's their manager who makes these decisions, a person who's observing them. And while DAOs will eventually make, and by the way, you know, with the right technology, you could have a DAO that looks just like a company, right? The DAO could elect a CEO. And then in the smart contract, you could define that the CEO has rights over the people under the CEO. And then those people have control and rights over the people below them. But I think the philosophy of DAOs is to be more decentralized, at least more distributed, at least to put power ultimately more in the hands of the people holding the tokens or who are members of the community. And when you do that, it becomes very hard to solve all these problems that companies have found a different way to solve through their hierarchy. So there are technologies, you know, popping up, I'd say every week, that aim to go after these social, you know, community management kind of challenges, but we have a long way to go. And so those are the challenges that DAOs are facing that are less easily solved by technology, but that we are cleverly finding ways to apply, you know, Web3 related technology to try to solve.
Well, I think that on behalf of the CityDAO community here, we'd love to chat with you a little more about some of these subjects. And we'd also love to contribute wherever we can to help, you know, doing what you're doing. People like you stepping up and taking that personal challenge, that weight on your shoulders to push forward in a emerging industry and find the answers where they don't exist and help people lean towards success and avoid some of the common pit traps and falls. This is the kind of stuff that should be commended. So, you know, I'd certainly commend you on doing what you're doing. And I think everyone here at the CityDAO would, yeah, love to support you and get your input as well. If you're not part of our Discord, and anyone listening to this too, definitely join in the Discord, join in the conversations. We're trying to do this together. We're all trying to work in this DAO ecosystem and make good things happen. So Adam, it's a pleasure chatting with you. I hope that we keep some communication and would love to, you know, introduce you to the city council here and, you know, have some conversations and see where that might go. It's a pleasure to, you know, chat with people like you that are doing what you're doing. So again, on behalf of everyone here at CityDAO, thanks again for taking your time and joining. And, you know, is there anything else in your mind you want to share with anyone before we wrap up?
You know, DAOs are going to change everything from how we organize, everything from chess clubs up to national and international governments and everything in between. It's just that it's going to take a lot of work and creativity to get us there. So anyone who's not part of a DAO yet, you know, just like last year, the best way to get into crypto was to buy an NFT. This year, the best way to get into crypto is to join a DAO. And that can mean a lot of different things. But I think actually going to CityDAO and joining the Discord is a great way to start. And you'll learn so much by doing that. So that's what I'd encourage everyone to do. And thank you, Eric. It's been awesome getting the chance to chat with you. And I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Awesome. I'm glad we got this started. So everyone listening, make it a great week. And we will see you next time on the CityDAO podcast.